Okay, please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Mike H. from the Age of Miracles group in Westfield, New Jersey.
Lighting, huh? Good evening. My name's Mike. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Good morning.
A number of things I'd like to say up front. My name is Mike Deanna, but they call me Mikey Hats. I've got quite a hat collection. I'm grateful to be here, very grateful to be here. I just wanted to say I was greeted numerous times very warmly on my way in and once I was in, and that was really cool. So thank you. It's always a good sign for me. My home group is the Age of Miracles group in Westfield, New Jersey. We meet Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. for a big book workshop. We have the book broken up into certain portions, and we ask a speaker to come for 2 to 5 weeks and read that line by line and share their experience with it. And then Friday nights we have a big book study where another book we have predetermined, we tell you how many paragraphs you're going to read, and we just go around in the room and share, kind of have a discussion. You can share more than once, and we usually don't get through more than 2 or 3 paragraphs, and we really dig in and juice this book. And then Sundays we have a beginner's big book meeting, which is we have 3 10-minute speakers, and they each pick any 1 or 2 paragraphs they want out of the book and spend 10 minutes on that, and then we go to sharing. I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor, and he has a sponsor, and I sponsor, and I try to stay in the middle of all that. My sober date's October 1st, 2008. I'm not all that special. I always wanted to be very special, right? I always tried to be special. I always tried to stand out. And the truth is, today I'm trying to be pretty average. I'm trying to be pretty normal. When you guys come with the basket, please don't miss me. Sometimes that happens when I'm up here. That being said, there's a few things I wanted to, I also wanted to say, I love that you guys say the set-aside prayer and that you guys use the word illness in there. I hear the word disease a lot in that prayer, and, you know, frankly, in my experience, Bill never calls this a disease. He calls it an illness and a malady. And I could get into why I think that is. There's hardly a thing that's been printed by Alcoholics Anonymous that I haven't read. Pretty much what I haven't read is the flyers that are specifically for this, this, and this, because I don't think anything we do is specifically for. But anyways, Bill does refer to it as a dis-ease, right? I do want to ask you guys to just please try to be fully present tonight. Let's have an experience together. Let's leave what's out there. And, you know, all we really have is this moment, and let's nurture it together and go on a little journey, on a little path. And that being said, there's a couple things that I wanted to start with. There's a little paragraph that we hear read at a lot of meetings on page 58. And I'm just going to read 2 things out of here. But this one I'd like to read to you because I like to give you a little idea of what you can expect from me. And I think that the big book actually instructs me on how I should speak and share at meetings. And this will probably sound like a very familiar paragraph if you've been around. But maybe you've never heard it read this way. And you know, let me say while I'm at that I'm kind of nervous. So give me a few minutes. I'll be relaxed. If you have a different experience than me, or your sponsor has a different experience than me, we can both be right. I'm not here to tell anybody what they need to do because I don't know what you need to do. I'm just here to share my experience with a new way of life that was given to me through the practice of spiritual principles laid out in these steps in the book. And I do like to challenge things. I like to question, right? And that's kind of a cool thing because growing up and being and becoming an alcoholic, I never questioned anything my mind told me. Right? My mind told me and I did. I felt and I reacted. Right? And one of the things that Alcoholics Anonymous, that God, that this way of life has allowed me to do is question and push back on my mind. So, I just kind of want you to buy into this idea. that maybe this paragraph I'm going to read to you could be looked at the way I'm going to share it with you. And again, it's going to sound familiar. It's on page 58. And it says, our stories disclose in a general way. And the first thing I like to say is in a general way, right? And I usually ask when I'm working with somebody, what does the word general mean, right? And I'm also going to tell you now that I'm always going to use definitions that work for what I want to say. You may have a definition, cool, but I am going to use what works for me. So for me, in a general way, means kind of the opposite of detailed, right? So again, I read this paragraph as how I should speak and share in an AA meeting. So it says that my story should just disclose without details, right? Without detailed war stories, what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And in the book, it says we. But the singular version of we is I. And the reason I like to read that paragraph and share that is because often around AA, and maybe it's a Jersey thing, what I hear is the word it. And it is a completely different word from we or I. It is everything but me, right? So what ends up happening is I go to a lot of meetings and I hear people share, not in a general way, in a very detailed way, their stories of what everything outside was like, right? And so what I hope to do is, in a general way, tell you what my alcoholism was like, right? Always an alcoholic, but what I was like, right? Dealing with alcoholism. And then what happened? And I often find that I go to speaker meetings and that the what happened seems to be the bottom. But what I hope to share with you tonight is that the what happened is the bridge. That's the 12 steps. And then what I'm like now. And so I'm kind of given three pieces. And when I share, I like to kind of go 30-30-40 with that, as opposed to 40% war stories and then 35% of the end and then, oh, by the way, I went through the steps. And I'm not here knocking anybody else or however you speak or share. I'm just telling you how I do this. And the reason I try to do 30-30-40, right, spend a little extra time on what I'm like now, is because then it goes on to say, if you've decided you want what we have. And one of the things that I like to share with that is, well, how do you decide you want what I have? And I'm going to use this opportunity to just have you question, you know, what I know is a trap. What I know is not a teachable place, right? I'm a big believer in that. And trying to be wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, trying to get to a place where I don't know. Because I can be taught when I don't know. So one of the things I hear in AA a lot is, don't compare. Right? And I think when you're hearing detailed war stories of what everything outside was like, and you're comparing that, I understand. But what I'm proposing to you is, if I can share in a general way what I used to be like, the solution I found, what my life's like now, you can compare what your life looks like, right? How you're experiencing the world right now. And then it goes on to say, if you've decided, so again, if you've decided, how do you decide? By comparing that you want what I have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, that's when you're ready to take certain steps. Then, right? And I found that I made this mistake in Alcoholics Anonymous too, of every newcomer coming in the door trying to shove the 12 steps on them. When what we actually read in the book over and over and over is, you know, the man with the carpet slippers, Fred, is that these kids came in, Bill and Bob, shared what their alcoholism was, a general idea of what the solution looked like and what their life looked like now. And many times these newcomers said, thank you for the information. I've got it from here. And I think that that's the most normal reaction to anything, because that's how I deal with all my other problems, right? Arm me with facts about my problem and I got it. So as I go, I kind of try and soften on that. And hopefully when I meet a newcomer, I 12-step them, I qualify them, I share a little bit about what my alcoholism is, the solution I found, and what my life's like today. And then if they decide they want what I have, they might be willing to go to any lengths to get it. But I'm done with the convincing piece, right? I'm not here to convince anybody of anything. So that being said, the other thing that I wanted to read really quickly, I noticed a gentleman. And this is not to set anybody apart. We had a great conversation. I think we're on the same page. And he said recovering, and I said recovered, Right? Are we saying two different things? I don't know. That's your experience. This is my experience. And that's cool, right? Like, that's cool. But what I do want to read with you is how I came upon that word. And I remember I was about a year and a half sober, and I went to this meeting, and all these guys were saying, I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I was not in a particularly good place, but I thought that sounded really good. And I started saying I was a recovered alcoholic, and then I started pointing my finger and barking at you, right? And telling you, if you're not doing the steps, you're not sober, and all this other big book thumpery stuff. And I don't mean big book thumper as a negative either. And then I stopped using that word recovered because I took a lot of heat. A lot of people didn't like that. And maybe what they more didn't like was that I was barking and yelling at them, telling them what they got to do. And so I went with my sponsor and I said, what's up with this word recovered? I know I shouldn't use it out of ego and I shouldn't not use it out of fear. And he said, well, why don't you have your own experience with that word? And at some point I discovered this little bit on page 90. And it says, so this is in Working with Others, right? A family member has referred this alcoholic to me. And so that's kind of the context. It says, let his friend or family ask him if he wants to quit for good, and he would go to any extreme to do so, right? So take that. Ask him if he would like to quit, if he wants to quit, and would go to any extreme to do so. So when I'm in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I'm going to make what I think is a pretty safe assumption that someone in here wants to quit for good and is willing to go to any extreme to do so. And it follows up by saying, if he says yes, right, that he wants to quit for good and is willing to go to any extreme to do so, if he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to me as a person who has recovered. And I read that as an instruction. And as I talk about step one, I'll talk a little bit about what is recovered, what is cured, right? What is recovering? My experience with those things. And I'm not here to lecture or tell. I'm just here, like I said, to share my experience, and we can have totally different takes on this. But I want to tell you a little bit about what I was like. Selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and afraid. I wanted so badly to be a good guy. I wanted so badly to be a nice guy, right? And I don't know what happened. It's funny, I'm a stay-at-home dad. I have three young kids. And I remember when my daughter was 18 months old and I lived in New York. And it was one of these days where it had rained hard for days. And at the moment, it wasn't raining hard. This is a detailed story, isn't it? But it's not about what I was like. Anyways, run with me. It's one of these days and it's raining, right? And I'm in a hurry to get my daughter to this place to play, right? We got this class at 10 o'clock and gotta go. Come on, Emily. Come on, Emily. And she's jumping in the puddles. And I'm yelling at her, come on, right? 18 months old. And something hit me. I'm sober at the time. And it hit me. She's got this right. She's got this right. When did I complicate everything, right? I'm in a rush yelling at her to take her somewhere to play. She's just fine playing in the puddle, right? So when did I complicate all this, right? And I don't know. I don't know when I became selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and afraid. But what I know is that at a young age, I did feel uncomfortable almost all the time. And then I discovered liquor. And then I chased it. And then I lost control of it, and I couldn't take not drinking. I had this delusion of a choice between drinking and not drinking. And it's funny, I think it's easy to treat drinking as the worst thing that we can do. But for me, not drinking is worse. That's why my insane mind always decides drinking, right? Alcoholism, in my experience, and I can show it to you in the book over and over and over, is one thing. We often refer to as a three-part illness. And while I don't fully disagree with that, there is one thing that is either is or isn't, black or white, yes or no, and that is whether or not I have this craving, right? That I can't control how much alcohol I take most of the time once I start. And the most of the time is really important for me because there was that one time, right, that I spent 4 years chasing that one time where I had a good night and I was able to get a good buzz and go home. And my mind lies to me. In step two, I didn't like at all that they were implying that I was insane. Right? They're saying here, if I need to be restored to sanity, they're saying I'm insane. And I could give you a pretty good definition of the word insane, but I couldn't see how it applied to me. And so what I'd like to propose to you, I'll give you like 3 or 4 seconds to think about it. Think about what's the most insane thing you ever did. What's the most insane thing you ever did? And unless you've been through this big book, or maybe even if you have, or maybe I'm wrong, maybe most of you already understand, but the idea I propose to you is that's probably not the most insane thing you ever did. The idea that I propose to you is that probably the most insane thing you've ever done is with absolutely no alcohol in your system, with the most amount of time you ever had, your mind was able to convince you that this time it'd be different. Right? That this time I'll manage and control it. Right? And then once I pick that up, it kicks off this thing. And I'm in this infinity symbol. And that leads me to, again, I think that we all have this mental illness. We all have this spiritual illness. But with alcoholics, it seems to be louder than normal people, right? My mental component keeps convincing me of this insane choice to pick up alcohol again after what happened last time and the time before and the time before and the time before. And one of the reasons I shared this is if I was cured of alcoholism, right, which again is one thing at its core, that would mean that I could drink. It doesn't mean I'd never drink again. It means that that craving would be eradicated, right? And I'm frankly glad that there's no cure for alcoholism, because then I would be able to stop drinking, but I would continue to solve my problems with drinking. I'd just have an off switch. And because I couldn't find a cure, or there's not one that I know of, I get beaten down into this place where I'm reasonable enough to consider maybe something different. And what's underneath this insane mind regarding alcohol is this serious spiritual illness. I don't process or react to anything right, right? Everything has something to do with me. If you and I are going to Florida and we've been planning this trip for months, and you call me one day and you say your cousin died and you can't go, my first thought is that screws my trip up, right? My first thought is not, dude, I'm sorry. Now, what this way of living has done for me is the words that come out of my mouth after a few seconds pause is generally, dude, that's terrible. Of course you can't go, right? Let's see if we can get your money back, or maybe I'll split the loss with you. So my alcoholism, I can't control how much once I start. I happen to be this thing the book refers to as a chronic alcoholic. I can't control whether or not I start. And what's underneath it all is this fear and this ego. And they work together and they work apart and they're just mangled and knotted and running all through me. And I have no idea what's going on. And I spent my whole life. Let me propose this idea to you. If you haven't had an experience with these 12 steps, it's possible that you've never, I'll bring it back. Let me say me. Before I have an experience with these 12 steps, I never made a clear choice for myself ever in my whole life. Never, not once. Every choice I ever made was made by fear. Right? And I'm a guy who comes in here and I grew up in a really bad neighborhood, years in prison, and you want to talk to me about fear, I want to punch you so that I can prove I'm not afraid. Right? That was one of the things I learned early is mask fear with aggression. But it turns out all I ever experienced was fear. And that move comes out of I'm more afraid of looking weak, right, than I am actually getting beat up. Right? I'm more afraid of being taken advantage of. I'm more afraid of what you think of me. I'm afraid of everything, right? And so I come to AA. I spend about 2 years in AA. I didn't want this big book. I didn't want to do this sponsor thing. I really didn't even want to stop drinking. I figured if you guys had the thing I had, that you probably just figured out how to drink, right? Like, there's no way you actually quit drinking. And as I sat and I suffered and, you know, I got hugged and patted on the back and told, you'll be okay, kid, just keep coming. I just kept drinking. And I don't know what was different about September 30th, 2008, except a couple things. One was my wife had packed her duffel bag and taken it to work, and there was only one toothbrush in the bathroom. And I could not figure out why. right? And when what's plain to you all probably came, she left you. I was like, there's no way she left me, right? Like, what is she going to do without me? Meanwhile, I haven't done a dish, right? Or a load of laundry or anything else. And God knows how long I haven't worked, right? I'm just this disgusting, dripping, sweaty, drunken mess all the time. But my ego tells me, what's she going to do without me? Another thing that was different was I had liquor left, and that almost never happened. I lived in Washington State for a year, and their liquor stores are closed on Sunday. And it did not matter how much liquor I bought Saturday night to be prepared for Sunday. I didn't have enough liquor for Sunday. Right? Crazy how that goes. But I had liquor left this morning. And the third thing that was different that I didn't realize at the time was that God came into my life. And I wanted no part of this word God. I thought you guys were going to try and, like, put stuff in me or turn me into some kind of square, boring priest, lame. I didn't know what that was about, but I didn't want it. I was not interested in that at all. But I will tell you that God, higher power, whatever you want to call it, entered my life that day. And I knew that I was going to finish that drink, and I was going to go back to this meeting where there was this one guy who I hated. This guy, Jeff. And this guy, Jeff, I hated him. But something hit me that morning that I realized that that guy was the only one that I heard who cared enough to tell me the truth the whole time. Stuff like, you're full of shit. Right? Stuff like, you have no idea what you're up against. And if you got the thing I got, no matter how many meetings you go to, if you don't change your inside, you're screwed and you'll drink again. And he just told me the truth and the truth and the truth and the truth. And I hated him for it. But that morning, I knew. And I detoxed at home for about 3 days. I went to this meeting and found him, and I was in tears. And I was like, dude, you got to help me. I'll do anything. And he said, listen, Mike, I got a lot of guys right now. I can't give you the time you need and the time you deserve. And he walked me over to another guy, probably the last guy in the room I would have picked, and he said, this will be your sponsor. And so I started working with this guy, and I found out what I had, right? That I'm dealing with this physical component and this mental illness and this spiritual malady. And at some point, that guy realized that I was hooked. And I kind of want to move a little bit into step two and talk about how wide open this step is. You know, I've been in a lot of step two meetings and listened to everybody talk about what their conception of God is. And I find myself thinking, you may have fully missed the point of this step. Right? When I'm focused in step two on what God is, I think for me, the step is going over my head. That I need to just be willing to believe that maybe it's possible there's something out there. And, you know, we're told, as we understood him, her, it, an idea I like to propose to you is, as I understand, can be not at all. I just had to move that far away from absolutely not, no way, never. And I don't know if you guys even saw my hand move, right? But that's how much I had to move away from no. Just maybe it's possible that there could be something. And I was told that on that, and I'm here to share with you because I've built it, I've seen it, I've experienced it, I live it. You can build a beautiful, wonderful life and program of recovery on just the willingness to believe that maybe it's possible. And in addition, I'll say, I didn't believe these steps were going to work for me, right? Like if I gave you a recipe for a cake and all the ingredients, you could probably make that cake, and you don't even have to believe it's going to be a cake while you're making it for it to become a cake. And that was my experience with this until about step five. And three, I started to go to another level of maybe. But in step two, my sponsor just told me, you better start begging God to be real, because if your mind and your best thinking is the only thing you've got to fight this, your history, as I understand it, shows that you'll lose every time and you're going to die this way. And I did. I started begging God to be real. Started getting on my knees and throwing a prayer up. But again, it's not about that. It's about moving away from, right? And I sponsor a lot of people with time, or you know, I got a guy right now. He's got 6 years sober and he needs to have a new experience. And I'm having to remind him how big God is, right? God's bigger than all of it. Bigger than all of it. All of it. What's it? All of it, right? How much? All. And sometimes I need to get tapped back into that. So what happened for me was I got on my knees and I made a decision to turn, and I'll just shorten that, all. All. Will and lives. All. There's this thing going around New Jersey where people are saying my thoughts and my actions, and that kind of covers it pretty good, but I feel like it still doesn't fully cover it. All. All. I turned all into God. And what that looks like for me is, well, what am I left with, right? If I give all, what am I left with? And what I want to share with you tonight is that I got most of me back. It just almost all needed to be remolded and reshaped, right? This process for me, this way of life, was not about putting stuff in me. It was more like when Michelangelo was asked how he created the statue of David, his answer was, it was already there, I removed what didn't belong, right? And that's kind of been my experience with this process, is it's been more about chipping away. And generally that's based in what I know. Chipping away at what I know, right? Because it turns out, what I don't know has never been a problem. My problem's always been everything that I know for sure. And some of it, it turns out I'm wrong about, right? I'm locked into these ideas for certain. And then it turns out I'm wrong, right? Kind of like that girlfriend who, she's gone and she's not answering her phone, and I know what she's doing, right? And then I hear what actually happened, and I'm like, oh yeah, I guess it could have been that too, right? I think I know. So what I was asked to do basically was jump out of the airplane with my sponsor and hope that he packed the chute right. And that may sound extreme, right? This is certainly physically safer than that. But it was that scary for me. To get on my knees, hold this dude's hand, and offer all of me to this power that I don't understand at all, don't really believe in, but I don't think I have a choice. And I did, and I jumped out of the parachute with him. And I'd love to get into how I balked on the four-step, and how I sat in four-step meetings talking about I'm almost done with my four-step and I haven't even picked up the pen, right? And I'm convinced that I'm doing it in my head, and how I was in the most dangerous place I'd ever been in my life, sitting in a four-step thinking about it without the relief that comes in 5 through 9 and without the relief that alcohol gives me. And I ended up at 8 months sober into worse behavior than I'd probably ever done drinking. There was a couple things that I had never done drinking that I was now doing sober. And now I'm able to convince family members and stuff to give me money so I can make amends, right, and go on shopping sprees, all while I'm sitting in a four-step. And my sponsor essentially kidnapped me. He said to me one day, I'll be at your house at 8 a.m. and I'll drop you off at home for dinner. And he brought me to the intergroup office in Queens and sat with me all day while I wrote. And he took me home at dinner time and he said, I'll be here at 8 a.m. tomorrow. And he came day two and came to the great, great union job. He could just take days like that. But he sat with me for 3 days. And what happened was I started to take a good, honest look at my life. I started to look at all of my resentments, right? And one of the ideas that I like to propose to you is, you know, we have this idea, we talk a lot about forgiveness. And what I learned in the four step is that I don't ever really need to forgive, because all of my need to forgiveness is based on my initial judgment, right? You do something, I convict you, I judge you, and then I'm told I need to forgive. Well, what if I never make that initial judgment, right? It's funny. I'm 14 years sober and I spend all this time with my sponsor and a pen trying to get over these resentments that I should have never picked up in the first place, right? That's the problem, is I pick this garbage up. That's the real problem. That's what I find in the four step, is that I create my own problems. Yes, some people did some bad things, right? Absolutely, yes. And with those, it's time for me to start to heal, right? I can't continue to kill myself over stuff that happened 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. And listen, I'm covering a wide amount of stuff here, and then please have a sponsor. And I don't mean to be insensitive, because there are some deep stuff that needs more work. But for me, ultimately, even today, I create my own problems. I create my own problems with my reaction to what you do. In fact, I'll just say in my life today, there are no problems. Zero. No problems. There are things that happen, and then my mind processes it and reacts, and in here is where it becomes a problem. Right? In here doesn't change what happened. That's still just a thing that happened that I have to navigate. Go through. I don't get to go around it anymore. I don't get to avoid it. I don't get to stuff it in the back. But the problem part of it happens in my head. What I do with my head doesn't change that this thing happened and it needs to be navigated, right? And I start to learn how to do that, right? I start to learn to not have problems, to just have things that happen in front of me and then my reaction to them. And I as I said earlier, I came to find out that I was driven by 100 forms of fear, and that they really were just, you know, I just heard a fifth step on Saturday, and I told this guy, listen, I could break all your fears down into like 9 or maybe 7, or I really could break them down to 3. I could really put it in 1, maybe 2, right? But you need to see in your own writing all the manifestations of it. But it turns out that I'm really just afraid of 3 things. You, me, and the unknown, right? And I really could boil that down to, I'm really just afraid of me or you, right? Either one. I'm afraid of you because if you all hate me and you all judge me, if you all knew me, then I'm left with just me, right? And if left with just me, what is that? Right? I was told a few years ago that, you guys want to know what the key to not feeling like a fraud is? Don't be a fraud. That blew my mind. The key to not feeling like a fraud is to not be a fraud. And then the unknown, right? So the unknown's tied right in with that. What does it look like? When we get to these fears and I get later in the columns, I ask these guys, what's that look like? What's that look like? What's that look like? What's that look like? Right? What's the worst case scenario in that? You get this fear and it always boils down to these same simple things, right? I'm alone. I'm alone. And just me, I'm a loser. I'm worthless. I'm useless. I'm unlovable, right? I'm a bad dad. I'm a failure. Turns out, what I find is that all my decisions, all my life are based in this. And then I go into looking at all the harms that I've caused people and why all my relationships with women have been a failure. And it turns out that every relationship I've ever had with any woman who I found attractive and had more than one conversation with, I never presented true transparent self, right? I present the self that I think you might sleep with, right? And I found this in an inventory I wrote at 5 years sober. I couldn't understand why I couldn't have healthy relationships with women. I couldn't figure it out. And I came up with that on my own, and that's what I found. I found that I never presented true transparent self, right? And I've gotten to a place today where I have 5 best friends and 4 of them are women. And my wife, who's not one of us, says, sure, you can go on a drive with Amanda for 3 or 4 hours. No problem. Right? And Amanda's boyfriend goes, I'm jealous as fuck. But I know you guys have been friends way longer than I've been with her. I can have these healthy relationships because now I'm okay with me. And I can present that to you. And I surround myself by people who are okay with me as long as I'm true, transparent self. Right? And that's what I'm about today. Like, I don't care if we disagree on everything. I don't care what your politics are. Let's talk about principles. Right? Let's talk about principles. Principles are like this pillar right here. It doesn't change because of the situation around it. It doesn't change. Honesty doesn't change because of the data put into it. Right? Honesty doesn't change because it's over here and it's uncomfortable and it's over there and it's very comfortable. I'm either honest or I'm not at all times. Easier said than done, right? Love. Love is a principle that doesn't change, right? And for me, love is more a space that I create than a feeling. Love is a space that I create around me that accepts whoever shows up, however they show up, whenever they show up. Much like a dog, right? Yell at your dog, forget to feed him, kick him. And what happens next time you walk in the door? They love you, right? Love is not hard when my wife comes in from work and she's happy and she wants to make me dinner and give me a back rub, right? Loving her then is not love. Love is treating her the same when she walks in and she's had a grumpy day and wants to know why I haven't made dinner and why the dishes aren't done and why the kids haven't done their homework. Can I treat her the same in that situation? How do I create that space, right, of love? And if I, it turns out that I brought none of this to any of my relationships ever. No honesty, ever. So then in step five, I start to really get to the core of this and I start to get my sponsor's view on this and God's invited in. And it's just another level of the same kind of honesty that I just talked about. But it turns out that I'm not good at appraising me, right? I'm not good at being honest with me about me. Fortunately, I've learned to get better about it. And I needed to share all my secrets. I needed to get all the weight of all the garbage that I've been carrying for years. My really good Michael Finley, he talks about this. And man, I want to get to this level. I'm not. But he says to me, I don't care if my sponsor blabs my fifth step. It has no power over me anymore. And I go, wow. Right? Right? The only reason it still bothers me is I got fear. I got fear of my reputation. I got fear of how I look. Right? What would you think of me if you knew what I did? Right? And it turns out that none of that matters. None of it matters. I've experienced deep levels of humility, and I do not want to go into those. I do not like walking into situations. I had to make an amends to my whole home group not too long ago for pretty bad behavior. And I showed up there, and I did not want to do it. And I did it, and afterwards, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, there's nowhere to go but God. There's nowhere to go. You all know. Right? There's no more fear of what if you knew. You all know. And I just lean into God. Everything I talk about is easier said than done. I love to tell you I behave these ways all the time. But I've had some great teachers. And I have a low tolerance for internal pain these days. My sponsor today, she knows everything. Right? Which brings me later on when we get to step 10. It's funny. Is it 10? We talk about I can go anywhere free men or women go. Provided I'm in fit spiritual condition. And it's funny, I'll sit in these meetings and here's my checklist for fit spiritual condition, right? How do I know I'm in fit spiritual condition? For me, it's really simple. My sponsor either knows everything or she doesn't. I got secrets or I don't. That's it. It's that simple for me. I either have secrets or I don't. So then what happens is, I start to get ready to have God remove all this stuff in me that's blocking me off from Him, from blocking me off from you, blocking me off from open relationships, blocking me off from being useful. And I do want to point out, because maybe my favorite line in the whole book is this little line in step 6, and it just shows the beauty of God and the beauty of this way of life. And it says, if we're not willing, we ask Him to help us be willing. How beautiful is that? Right? I go on this marathon, 3 days of 4 and 5, and I get on my knees ready to ask God to remove this stuff, and lust comes up and something goes, but I like that. Right? Later it's pointed out to me, is it possible that maybe you're supposed to lust for your wife? I go, what? Whoa. Who would have thought, right? But anyways, this thing pops up and I'm told all I need to do is be willing to have God remove it or ask Him to help me be willing or ask Him to help me to be willing to be willing. Right? The simplicity, the way that God meets me where I am, that all I've got to do is be open, is really beautiful. And when I'm willing, I start asking. And I do like to share in this because once I get to this step, I start to look at my character defects as verbs, not nouns. Okay, so when I'm going through this fifth step, I'm looking at these character defects as nouns. This thing needs to be removed, this thing needs to be removed, this thing needs to be removed. And it turns out that a lot of it doesn't get removed. It just gets changed and shifted and molded and it becomes useful to God. So I start to look at it more as it's not the thing that needs to be removed, but it's the how I use it that needs to be changed. Right? Again, lust. Right? Never occurred to me. My last sponsor, I went to him, I was like, when's this lust going to go away? And he said, where's that in the big book? I was like, fuck, I'm in a trap. If he says that to me, I know it's not in there, right? I'm like, I know it's in there. Everybody in AA says it. He goes, well, who says it? I'm like, ah. And that's when he said to me, he's like, dude, is it possible? You're absolutely supposed to have lust. I'm like, but it never works for him. And he goes, have you ever lusted for your wife? I'm like, what the fuck? Sorry, my language is terrible. My perception of everything, how I use everything to serve me, right? Then I start to grow towards that ideal. And then what happens is I start to make a list and become willing to make amends to them all. And I'm going to move quickly through this, not that it's not a heavy, important step. I'll tell you where willing to make amends to them all happened for me. And where it separated from nine. My sponsor, when I was done with my eight step, I had now, later, and never. And he had me go pick anyone I wanted to make that was fairly easy. And I went and made that. And he had me make one that was a little bit challenging that I was afraid of. And then he made me go make the amends I was never willing to make. And he reminded me that I was willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And so that amends I was never willing to make was the third one I make. And that's where I became willing by doing. And what I want to share with you guys tonight, too, is I don't know where you're at in the steps or in your way of life. And I'm kind of less about calling these steps and more calling it a way of life. Because these are not standalone things. Right? Like, it's funny, we're like, I gotta do step three. Well, aren't I really doing step one as well? Right? And then maybe 11 and 10. And when I'm doing 11 and 10, I'm certainly doing all of these. So, it's a system that doesn't work standalone. It only works well when I'm operating on all of them. But I need to build to that. When I spend this time with God and move into these steps, what's happened is I've really started to get cleared out. I've started to get a good, honest look at myself and all my garbage that I create for myself. And I mistake that for the change that this talks about. And that's not the change for me. That's me absolutely primed and ready for change. That is me primed and ready for change, what happens in 6 and 7. And then I go out and I really start to experience another level of humility. And I start to get right with you and God and myself. And I say it in that order. It's not really in that order. You is how I notice I'm not right, right? But if I'm not right with you, it's because I'm not right with me. And if I'm not right with me, it's because I'm not right with God. And it always works in that order for me. But I start to go out and see that it wasn't the money I stole from you that was the problem. Right? It was the peace and the tears. Right? It was the night's sleep. It was the friendship. It was the trust. It was the girlfriend who I cheated on and how I affected every boyfriend she had for years. Right? It was what I really did, and I got to sit and listen. Right? I got to not know. Right? I got to sit there and not know and be humble and then try to make it whole. And then I didn't do my 30-30-40 right, but I do have 10 minutes left there. Again, I like to propose new ideas to people. And what I've come to experience, I love to like fight slogans all the time. So forgive me. And I frankly don't dislike the slogans as much as I act like I do. And this isn't a slogan at all. But I often hear people saying that they live in 10, 11, and 12, right? That these are action steps and that they are maintenance steps. And just a new perspective on that for me, when I'm practicing 10 and 11, every day, humbly, honestly, the result is 12. But this is not an action step at all. No thought goes into this. No energy needs to be put forward. Now, I want to spend a lot of time in these, but when I've had this experience and I'm doing this daily, the result of that is that I'm spiritually awake. That's the result, right? I'm not seeking to be spiritually awake. I'm seeking God through this. I'm spiritually awake. And I'm trying to carry this message. And another thing I hear a lot around AA, and I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying I take it further. This idea that I can't keep it if I don't give it away. For me, if I'm not giving it away, maybe I haven't got it. If I'm not lit up for sharing that desperate, broken dude who thought, get the F out of your book and God, right? And all you corny people. if I'm not lit up for sharing it, maybe I haven't got it. And the result of doing this daily is that I'm practicing these principles in all my affairs, parentheses, falling short all the time, and then going right back to here. And I do want to talk about 10, 11. Give me an hour, I'll talk. I could have just talked on step 10. I really could have, and I've done it. I just want to give a different take on this, because for about 9.5 years of my sobriety, I wasn't practicing this step at all. I was putting it in here. And for me today, step 11 is how I bookend my day. I start my day looking at what I struggled with yesterday, presenting it to God, and previewing what I got coming up today, right? Do I have a stressful situation? And there's two key components in all my morning prayer and meditation. One is equip me, right? Not make this go away, right? If I got a toothache, it's not make the toothache go away. It's got to equip me. Whatever it is that I have coming up today, equip me. Equip me. Equip me. And the other piece is, don't let me miss an opportunity to be useful to someone, because all I'm thinking about is myself. And I bring that in to my whole day. I got a stressful thing coming up today, something I often struggle with. Why not God equip me? And don't let me miss an opportunity to be helpful, because all I'm thinking about is myself. I also spend time in meditation. I also spend time in reflection. And meditation's another thing we could talk about for an hour. If you're wondering what meditation is, it's try meditation. That's what it is. Try meditation. Well, what's that? Just try it. Today for me, it's directed thinking. Before, it was trying to be quiet in my mind, and there's an infinite number of things. I hear people who propose to me that if I'm really doing this, I should mostly be in a meditative state, right? And that I really only come out of that meditative state when I'm thinking about myself. Meditation is try meditation. And again, it's so much bigger than that and so much deeper. For me today, it is the place where I'm closest to God and I'm not moving and I'm trying to be directed. But then I wrap up my night with reviewing. Reviewing all the times that I had to stop and do this. And I used to call that my 10th step, my nightly review. But really, when I look in the big book, it's laid out in 11. Right? So what I do is I spend some time looking at where was I agitated today, right? And hopefully as I went through the day, I stopped and processed that. And it's just a review of those times where I stopped and processed it, right? It's just a review of those. Did I miss anything? Do I still owe amends? Is anything lingering? Do I need to call my sponsor on this, right? And then again, I spend some time in meditation and reflection. And that's super bare bones, primal, because I want to get to this step. This is my life today. And this is something I didn't do for 9.5 years of my sobriety, right? I'm a stay-at-home dad, and I live on a county road, and I have 3 kids. And I remember when they were a little younger, right? And I got 2 got to get to school, and 1's got to get to this thing. And I go in and do my morning prayer and meditation in my room, and I come out, and I'm on fire, right? I'm spiritually fit for at least 2 minutes, right? And then my wife hasn't met the expectations that I didn't told her I had on what should be done with the kids. Right? And what happens? That fear, I might be late, I look like a bad dad because my kid's hair is messy, right? What happens? I save that for nightly review. And then I go to back out of my driveway, I got a driveway like this and I live on a county road and I'm going into this potentially stressful situation already running on resentment and fear that I'm hanging on to because I'm saving it for nightly review, right? And I pull on the driveway and nobody wants to let me in. And now I got like 3 fears and 2 kinds of ego kicking off in me, right? About 4 resentments going. And then if you're a parent, then I pull up to the school, right? And who knows about drop off at school, right? There's that mom, right? Now I'm convinced I got no resentments. I don't like that mom, this car. You cut me off. And I'm going into this next potentially stressful situation running on all this fear and resentment because I'm saving it for nightly inventory, right? And it's only 8:30. And then I got to go to the grocery store. And at some point, I'm going to have to do pickup with the kids. And then I'm going to go to an AA meeting and wonder why I hate half of you. Right? And I'm saving all this for nightly review. And my world was absolutely rocked when my last sponsor said, pull your damn car over. Whenever you're agitated, stop and process it so that you're not going into the next thing already carrying resentment, guilt, shame, whatever it is, all this garbage. And then what happens at night is I'm just reviewing all that stuff. Do I owe amends? Did I miss anything? Is anything still lingering? But why do I keep going into all these potentially stressful situations running on self? And he had me install this app, and I was like, dude, are you kidding me? Like, you're going to make me install an app? And he's like, yeah, because it's time-stamped, and I don't trust you. You'll just write them all at 7 o'clock, right? So he wanted to see, and I was in a place where I was willing, or I wouldn't have gotten that far with him. But when I pick up a resentment at 7:45, I stop and process, and then it takes like 10 seconds to run it through a quick four-step process, right? And I get that out. And usually it goes away. And the reason that I did all this writing early on was that when I do that, it starts to become a natural part of my working mind. It's not because the pen is always going to fix me. It's because my behavior, my reaction will start to change. I start to do this automatically. I'm like, that's the same old fear. I'm not picking that up. Right? That's the same old this. I'm not picking that up. And I fall short. You know, but if something's lingering, and I get on the phone and I call my sponsor, and I'm constantly sending these. And I'll tell you today, my 10 steps are super simple. They're super simple, and I only have one that I need to write like every 2 or 3 days. And here's my 10th step. It's this simple. Who? What? What's the fear? And are there any corrective measures? Right? It really is that simple because I've practiced this so disciplined for a good amount of time. And again, I fall short. I'm on about a year and a half run right now of the best recovery I've ever had. I haven't unfolded it, dismantled it. My sponsor knows everything. I'll just say it that way. I'm on about a year and a half run where I tell my sponsor everything, every day. I got no secrets. And oh, by the way, I came in here with completely the wrong goal in mind. I came in here to stop drinking because I thought I'd be okay if I could stop drinking. And it turns out, when I got okay, I lost interest in drinking. I lost interest. It's not a thing for me. I'm free. Do I still create garbage in my head? Yes. Do I still get angry? Am I still petty at times? Yes. In fact, that's probably the thing that bothers me the most. It's like, dude, I'm older than I look, I think, and I'm 14 years sober, and I can still be really petty. But I've got something to do with it, and I found it all in this book. And for the love of God, don't sit in this room and be so close to what I found and not get it. This journey's been beautiful for me. It's been amazing. I've got some really cool people around me who tell me the truth when I can't or won't hear it. And if I tell them to F off, they still love me tomorrow. And I thank them for loving me enough because I couldn't see it. I can't see it when I'm in it. I think I went a minute over. I hope that was an average, adequate presentation of my experience with what's available in here. Thank you.